You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Fun Show around the NFL's guide to Sunday and beyond. Dan Hans is here from the home studio. Joining me, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler, and the great Patrick Claibon. Nice foursome here. Like it.
First time we've had a guest here on the Friday Fun Show. I don't know if Claibon is ready to bring the requisite fun, but he looks ready. Nope, he doesn't look ready
well,
at all.
Well, the sound is not... He's also manning a small child, so let's see how this goes. I know he's got multiple duties.
I mean, the answer... There's your answer, Greg. Is Claibon ready for the fun? We haven't heard him yet, but he's going to work through the tech diffs.
There's nothing but fun here, guys.
There he is!
This is... This is all we have. We got some spelling games going on. This is fun.
I love it.
This is what you need here on the Friday Fun Show. This is what the people have been missing.
The doctor ordered this.
People think that the idea of having young children and constant responsibility is not fun. Well, you know, plug in because it is a ball. And yes, the reason why, if this is a regular podcast, we might stop down and say, oh, we're going to get Patrick's audio working and then we'll start the show. No, but this is live. That's part of the fun. It's a high wire act, Sessler. And we are here with all the listeners from America and abroad. So thank you to everybody that's on right now. The numbers are going up higher and higher. Sessler, do you have any butterflies when we're in a true live environment?
Yes. I mean, even though we just are about a week removed from doing a live show in front of real people, it's this production that gets me very nervous. I'm not sure what to say next. I'm just going to deal with it on a minute-by-minute basis.
I get a little nervous about the future of our company after Thursday Night Football, which we're going to get to in a little bit. But also, we're going to have our predictions for week 5 at the end of the show. And also, you know, a constant rebranding, a shifting as we figure out, like Friday Fun Show, working title, that's clear. Our new spotlight segment, same spotlight segment with a new name. So that's a little tease. Get ready. I mean, Greg, pinch yourself.
I mean, one of the commenters says after Thursday Night Football, another pandemic might sound like fun compared to that. I mean, that's going a little too far.
So if you're live with us right now, send in your questions during the show. We'll hit some of those throughout the episode. But let's start, yes, as we must, because this job isn't always fun. Just like rearing children, not always fun. There's responsibility. And talking about the American football game played on Thursday is an example. Let's go.
Surveys, good protection, slides, fires, broken up in the end zone. Gilmore on Sutton. So the defensive player of the year a couple of years back, and somehow, someway, the Indianapolis Colts, who took their first lead of the game on that field goal, pull out a 12-9 victory.
Al Michaels speaks for us all on Amazon. The final call on Russell Wilson's incompletion, in which he missed an open KJ Hamler, tried to stick it into Cortland Sutton, but Steph Gilmore said, "No, sir." Final score, Colts 12, Broncos 9. Overtime win for the Colts, somehow, impossibly. And Graver's like, "Are you kidding me? I'm trying to win the AFC South over here." And I got the Colts picking up these garbage wins to stay afloat as they try to figure themselves out. Let's get to the Broncos in a bit, because I know in some ways they're the more compelling story. But Pat, let's start with the Colts here, because it couldn't be any more ugly on offense, and yet they found a way with some help from the quarterback on the other side, of course.
Yeah, you go into a game without Jonathan Taylor, you're losing offensive linemen. Patrick Surtain has MPJ in absolute incarceration. There's just nothing to offer other than some Alec Pierce. A lot of Alec Pierce. Matt Ryan was chucking and ducking. He had one super weird fadeaway throw.
Oh, that was sad.
Barely crossed the line of scrimmage, where it's like, ugh, like, I don't know, guys. I don't know what we're doing here. There was so much excitement coming into the season, and now it's like, Matt, are you okay? Like, I was legitimately worried for
him. Can I just say to that, Patrick, like, I know exactly the throw you're talking about, and that was the one where I think I went to Twitter and I said, we got to get Matt Ryan in a broadcast booth stat, because this feels like it's setting up for disaster.
It barely crossed the line of scrimmage. Like, it was almost intentional grounding, and there was no reason for it. It was like a kind of like fadeaway flying kick throwaway that was just so awkward and uncomfortable. And that's how they won the game. It was awkward and uncomfortable. They almost turned the ball over two times on the game winning drive, but because it was not going right, the Broncos were hemorrhaging defensive players, and Russ was. It was a bad Russ game. Horrible, arguably the worst game he's ever played in his career. And that's what happened. You should have run the ball on 4th and 1, because there was so much conversation. It's like, oh, Nathaniel Hackett, you paid the quarterback all this money. You gotta. And so it's like, yeah, okay. So here we're gonna throw the ball. Like, just run the ball. It's 4th and 1.
I think that was absolutely a reaction from Week 1 and all the criticism. Although Hackett was quick to point out after the game, we gave Russell Wilson the option to run or pass there, and the run look he thought wasn't great, despite the fact that they ran the ball fantastic their last couple of drives. That was what was lost on it. Like, Russell Wilson hit on a 4th down that they went for the drive before he threw that interception that should have won the game. And up until that 4th down, like, they had run the ball straight down the field, and they had moved the ball down the field there. There were so many, like, unbelievably ugly moments where Russell Wilson doesn't see the other receivers. But the game was so bad that you're talking about here, Dan, that after the game, even the next day, Frank Reich was like, I didn't know how to feel about it. Like, you just won a game. You're 2-2-1. You're about, you know, people are worrying about you getting fired. And even Frank Reich is like, I don't know. That was so bad. I actually don't know how to feel about a last second comeback from the jaws of defeat victory. Like, Frank Reich couldn't even enjoy it.
I mean, I thought, Dan, you tweeted this, and I could not agree more visually that Frank Reich, it's probably this season, but I thought from the first quarter through overtime, aged visually about 7 years. I mean, he suddenly looked like an old man. And I mean, Quentin Nelson called it a disgusting effort, and Matt Ryan talked about how he's just simply exhausted after the game. I mean, it's hard. You can look at either side and say, I don't know which team was more visually unappealing, but there's no stakes for the Colts in my book. What's happening with Russell Wilson and the Broncos is...
What do you mean there's no stakes? They're 2-2-1. They're trying to save jobs.
Here's the thing. I'm saying, like, in general, the Colts, I've said all along, I think the Colts are like a good but not great team. I don't even think they're good. So I'm not really concerned about their final destination. But the Broncos experience, and that there's nothing greater than the cutaways to the fans in the stands. Like, last night in every one of these games, that are just like, this is what you sold us all offseason. Like, who's at fault here? This is like utter dumbness from the outer reaches. Like, it's the most unwatchable football product we've seen in years in Denver, and that's saying something.
I think that was one of the – it's certainly in the conversation for the worst primetime game I could remember. And I thought – I was thinking about it. When it was through – and we'll get to more of the fan stuff a little bit later in the show. But when it was through, you got this sense that in terms of Denver's – where they're at as a team, even when it looked like they were going to win the game, because the Colts were totally lost on offense, you could tell the Broncos and the fans on the sideline, no one was happy. But it's like, we're going to win this game, but we're not going to feel any better about ourselves, and there's going to be a lot of questions. And then when Russ throws the second pick, which was brutal, and they give up the field goal to tie it, and then can't get a stop in overtime, and then can't match it, that's kind of the worst type of loss you could have, because there's two type of brutal regular season losses. Let's keep out like a knocked out of the playoffs and week 18 out of it. But there's the one where you suffer some type of catastrophic injury to one of your best players, and then you work your way through a game and you lose the game on top of it. And then there's a game like this where you're ahead, but feelings are terrible and you know there's something broken about what's going on here, but you're going to win and get out of it. And then you get caught from behind and beat in a game like this. And I don't know how the Broncos recover from this, where they're at right now, because the vibes could not be worse around this team, the coaching staff, and of course the quarterback, who we can't, I know it's everyone's piling on Russ right now, but when you deliver a performance like that and you start the season like this, Patrick, there's no way to deny that his failures are a major part of the reason the Broncos are one of the biggest busts in football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's a part of it. Nathaniel Hackett's a part of it. Melvin Gordon's fumbles, absolutely a part of it. The defense does not deserve this from the other side of the ball and the coaching staff. They have been so good. They lost a couple of guys last night. Garrett Bowles lost last night as well, carted off. And so it's like both of those bad case scenarios, Dan, where you're talking about where you're ahead and
right,
and you somehow eke out of it, but everybody's worried. But also you guys get hurt. Also you lose in heartbreaking fashion. And it's like, where are we going here? We're committed now to this quarterback. We're committed to this situation. How do you continue? And all you can really say is that the season is long, the ball's not round, and a bunch of weird stuff can happen. And we've just seen it too many times, right? If you have talent, then you're not out of it. And we've seen Russ do this. This is not like this is Brian Hoyer out here. We've seen Russ be a good quarterback. So you can at least hearken back to that. But what we've seen this season, no, it's been awful. It's been bad.
We've never seen him at this level. I think he's shown hints of it over the last couple of years. This is obviously him in a new system, but he's been in a lot of new systems. I mean, that's the thing, is we've tried a million different systems to try to like figure out where Russ's weakness is in terms of throwing over the middle and not seeing the whole field can match up with his, which is obvious strengths. And now the weaknesses are just like crazy there for everyone to see, because almost every single one of these third down throws where he dumped it off like Alex Smith, like at his worst when it was like third and 13 and he's throwing it 5 yards, like they almost immediately showed someone wide open on the other side of the field, and Russ just didn't hit it. And there were like 4 or 5 throws that weren't close to anyone, that were like way out of bounds or were hitting like a huge patch of grass where no one was there. The most telling play to me was one where he was scrambling around in the red zone forever, and it was like, oh, here's the old Russ, like this is kind of a crazy old Russ play. And then at the very end of it, he just winged it as fast as he could, and it hit the play clock, and it just like hit the play clock at the back of the end zone and went like clunk. And I was just like, what is happening here? It's like him and Ryan are two of the worst starters in the league right now, and that's just, I just, even me as a huge Russell Wilson skeptic, could not have expected anything.
Couldn't you say the game became sort of beautiful in the sense that, and I'm not saying like it was fun to watch, but no Thursday night football game this year has attached itself to bigger talking points at this point. We were watching Russell Wilson's like entire career change before our eyes over the course of one night. And I'm wondering if he'll ever return to what we thought, or if this is something, if you're a Broncos fan, you're thinking, we just married the wrong person. We just signed up for this guaranteed money for a long time. And if it doesn't get better, this thing is going to become as ugly as any story in the NFL.
Might have married two of the wrong people.
Right.
You can get rid of one of them.
I think that's part of this story here, because I also sense you could definitely go down the road of Russ is washed, or he's not close to the same guy he was anymore. And now that the data and the stats, it's starting to back it up. So it's like, okay, but he doesn't look comfortable in this offense. And I still don't like, I hated that last play call, even though Hamler did flash wide open. It just seems like the whole scheme is out of whack. But it's also, I think, to your point, Mark, kind of open season. Russ is a guy that people, and we're not innocent in this, like we've long kind of poked fun at Russ and his public, the way he postures and the way he presents himself. And sometimes it comes off as inauthentic. And then you have on our own airwaves on NFL Network, I want to play Kyle Brandt. This is an example of like why this game, as bad as it was to watch, is weirdly good for football because it brings heat and it brings discussion.
I think Russell Wilson is one of the least authentic personalities we have in this league. I think Russell Wilson is a poser. And that doesn't mean he's a bad person. I actually think he's a good person. I think he tries to be something that he's not. And when you make the $245 million, you either got to be a really great guy with the locker room who loves you, or you got to be an amazing player.
And then, well, he wasn't done. He does not like Russell Wilson, Mr. Brandt.
You know, I work the NFL honors. I work the red carpet. Kelsey comes by. Rodgers comes by. Russell Wilson shows up with his sunglasses and his wife, and I think they think they're Jay-Z and Beyonce, and they will literally put their hand up and say, no, we're not talking. Why? Because you think you're that cool and you're that famous and you're that amazing and everything is so perfect. That does not work in a locker room unless you are really good or really, really good guy.
Greg, we talked about in London the comparison and how it feels similar, A-Rod and Russell Wilson, Alex Rodriguez in baseball and Russell Wilson in football. There's just something about this guy. So a game like that, an island game where he sets himself on fire, it was kind of the perfect stew for these type of reactions.
Right, but including from their defense. Their defense is balling out. They're like a top three or four defense. Baron Browning had one of the best games any pass rushers had all season last night. He had 10 pressures and 5 QB hits in 21 pass rushes. I've never heard of such a thing. Like, they have been incredible. That actually gives me some hope for this Broncos team, because as bad as they've been, they look like they have a top four or five defense. But we've been annoying people with Russell Wilson takes for a while. Great. I got you guys all upset last year with the take. Let's listen to it, Justin Graver.
Oh, Greg.
I'm not too high on Russell Wilson right now. To me, I don't want to be giving up a ton of first round picks for Russell Wilson right now.
That was during the game last night,
through the archives,
I knew, and I wish I had sent this to you guys on Twitter or on text. I knew Greg was going to replay a Russell Wilson tirade from last season.
I didn't even remember this.
Greg,
the whole idea
hating.
Was, do you want? But it was a legitimate football argument, because it was, the whole idea was, would you trade a ton of first round picks for Russell Wilson? And I said no, I would not trade him for almost any of these first round picks. At this point, I think he's past that point of his career, and I'd take Mac Jones over Russell Wilson. Right. And you guys at all my mentions, I wouldn't have remembered it, but I got a lot of mentions.
You're on a season left. You're on a bit of a heater, Greggy, and you deserve this moment because Geno is balling out. Russell Wilson has sucked. So I am not going to say you shouldn't call that up. That's good. Good job by you, Greggy. Let's see. But like Patrick just said, I want to see where we're at the end of this season, because I don't think Russ is this bad. I don't think he's washed, but I will say Nathaniel Hackett, and we should move on, but my last thought on this game, and then anybody else that wants to chime in, I think he's on a hot seat already. I think it doesn't happen a lot. We've talked about this, a one and done coach, but if this is the way this holds and you have Russ under contract and it doesn't work this year, first thing you're going to do is start over on the coaching staff. I would not be surprised if that happens, if this stays the course. Because that would be ugly.
Can I say one little thing about Kyle Brandt and NFL honors? Dan, you and I used to cover that, and it was a chore, let's be honest. But the first time I ever did, it was right after Russell Wilson's first season. And I waited around for 30 minutes to interview him. And he couldn't, it wasn't because of him that I waited. It was just the way it went. He couldn't have been nicer, kinder, more humble. He was a totally different person. So to hear what happened with Kyle Brandt and him, I think that speaks to the change of the Russell Wilson experience and what he's done in his life since then. I do think he's probably a nice person, but there's a lot of artificial substance going on there.
Or it could have just been an accurate portrayal of an event that took place. Like, at any point, somebody could meet me and I could be a certain way and they could say, all right, that's Patrick Claibon, right? The idea that Russ is uniquely disingenuous when it comes to NFL quarterbacks is kind of weird to me, because it's not like all of these guys are really giving us the 100% truth about how they feel about a given thing. I think the other quarterback on the field would be a clear example of that last night as well. And it kind of drives home the fact that we don't really know any of these guys. And in terms of like how it works in a locker room, Percy Harvin knocked out his teammate and then they went out there and won the Super Bowl. if you execute, it doesn't matter. Like, people work with people that they don't like all of the time. Like, sometimes it just goes south. As for why, like, Sherm and Doug Baldwin and all these guys have such vitriolic energy for Russ when he, like, threw a pick on the goal line, like, why it's that intense, I don't really know, because I don't know these people. And I think, like, it's very important for all of us to remember that despite the interaction, despite the exposure, despite the access that we have, we don't necessarily know these people. And I feel like sometimes the pendulum swings back a little too hard, and we're really getting after Russ when he doesn't have, like, sexual assault accusations. He's not lobbying for people to not take a vaccine. He's not doing these other things. People are going, like, pretty hard on Russ right now. And yeah. I'm
with you on that. That is a clay bomb. Everybody get under the table, duck for cover, because I'm with you too. But there's something about him that just, whatever, for whatever reason, makes him a target. And
well, his game is also divisive, and I think it always has been. I think there's always been people that thought, like, that if you're a real football guy and you want quarterbacks to be a certain way, like, he's had these shortcomings, and now they're coming out a little more. I did want to just support your point on the coach, Dan, and point out this ownership.
Well, if you're supporting my point, then go on.
Yes. This ownership did not hire Nathaniel Hackett. I think that's really important in terms of the timeline. And they did give Russell Wilson a somewhat unnecessary contract. I would say totally unnecessary. He had 2 years left on his contract already, making him one of the higher paid quarterbacks in the league. And they extended that thing 5 more years at a time that was unnecessary. But the ownership did give him that money. They did not hire Nathaniel Hackett. So I think that supports your Hackett could be one and done idea.
GC, good call. All right, before we move on, I thought the only true positive to come out of Thursday Night Football was Al Michaels, who doesn't care. Like, there's nothing you can do. How many billions of dollars is Amazon worth? The bosses in the highest levels of American corporate society, there is nothing anybody could tell 75-year-old Al Michaels on Friday morning. You've been too critical of the game. We want to keep people engaged. Don't tell them the product is bad. Al don't care. This is how I'll start with this. Here's Al Michaels calling the end of first half field goal going to break.
Well, what do you know? 6-3, we are back in a half minute.
how about an Al Michaels reel? How about that? Al Michaels is annoyed reel.
Type of game you'd like to have in the fifth regional on CBS on Sunday. Lest anyone think we couldn't find highlights, we did. 6-3, Denver at the half, 9 points tied for the third fewest in the first half of a game this season.
Third?
Yep.
Forgive me for getting excited there. We haven't seen a lot of offense.
No, I get you.
I mean, I was like, yeah. Wow.
Right.
That was beautiful.
You know, I'm only half kidding. But sometimes a game can be, at least at this point, so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Okay.
I'm not feeling that yet.
You know, if a game is like sort of bad, it's not good.
Yeah.
Good performance by Michaels. Bad performance by everybody else connected with the game. Herbstreit's like, what? What's going on
here? Al is in like this great place in his career where you can't tell him nothing. Even Roger Goodell, if he's watching that broadcast like last night, I think is laughing at Al. He knows.
All right. Okay. It always goes on about 6 seconds longer than I expect. It is time that every week each of us takes a turn. The floor is ours. It is our time to shine. In a segment has been rechristened in the name of Chris Wessling.
It's about me.
It's about me. And I want to talk about, it's my turn, I want to talk about fan entitlement. I grew up in New York as the rarest of birds, a fan of the Jets in football and the Yankees in baseball. And I have lived in opulence and I have lived in squalor as a fan. My teen years, which are kind of the most formative in sports fandom, featured a 1996 to 2000 stretch where the Yankees won 4 World Series titles. And that drip for the Yankees has slowed considerably this century, But I get, and I know that I'm entitled, that I'm blessed in that realm. The Yankees start another playoff run on Tuesday. They haven't had a losing record since 1992. Then there's my Jets fandom, which has included zero Super Bowl appearances in 42 years on this planet and counting. And that's been the yin to my Yankees yang. I've lived on both sides of the coin, my friends, is what I'm trying to say. And I bring this up because the scene at Mile High last night, it got on my radar a little bit. Broncos fans are pissed. They booed their team after the first drive stalled in the red zone. This has been a common occurrence really since the beginning of the year. The boos only got louder there as Denver stumbled through one of the more grotesque offensive performances that we could remember. And well, maybe the Colts was somehow worse on Thursday, but you get it. And the booing part is fine to me. I know that not everyone believes in that, but I believe that's within a paying customer's right to express dissatisfaction when you pay obscene amounts of money and then the performance doesn't seem to match what you paid for or what you were expecting. It's sports, but I do take issue with the shot by Amazon of the stream, the steady stream of Broncos fans exiting the building as overtime was set to begin. And I understand they had every right to be disgusted by Denver's performance through four quarters, but bailing on a tie game at the coin toss is, to me, the peak of fan entitlement. And just a reminder, this is an organization with eight Super Bowl appearances, tied with the Cowboys and Steelers for second most all time, only behind the Patriots. Three Super Bowl wins, including a Super Bowl 50 triumph in 2016, not too long ago. You're the team of John Elway. You're the team on the right side of the history for the drive and the fumble. You got the temporary euphoria of Tebow mania. You landed Peyton Manning in the greatest free agent sweepstakes of all time. Even the Russell Wilson trade, as bad as it looks right now, when it happened, I can tell you from personal experience that the have-nots of football felt envy for a Broncos organization that always seems to keep itself in the picture. Now think about being a fan of the Jets or the Browns or the Commanders or the Chargers or the Texans or the Panthers or the Falcons or the Lions or any other team that doesn't have a quarter of the history, the glory, the juice of a Broncos fan. So boo the team. Go ahead. Sure, they're playing like hell, and you paid a lot of money to watch them. That's whatever. But walking out on the team in a tie game, entering overtime, cry me a river. You should see how the other half lives.
The clapping is the sound of the ruler hitting their knuckles. Like, get back in the game. What are you doing?
Our audio listeners really should check this show out on YouTube because the stream of the viewer commenters was making me laugh, and I enjoyed it, and it adds a lot to the proceedings.
I like Blake Wingo, old man yells at cloud.
Okay.
Whatever, Blake.
It's old man yells at crowd is what we're looking
for. Ooh, I like that. It's a hard overtime, that's a tough spot. I'm with you. Although I do think as someone who's lost a little bit of juice after seeing their team reach the absolute pinnacle, you know, once you've seen the mountains, once you've seen the very best, it's like, oh, well, probably never going to get there again. It's hard to get the engines revved.
I'm with you, Dan. Like, I, you know, I lived in Denver for years, and I do think in general, the Broncos fans historically have been like a top five fan base. And not ultra annoying, to be honest. Like, I just think they're passionate. I kind of take a issue with what I saw last night, too, as you do. But I kind of think what's happened with the Broncos, their games have been so public. The crowd reaction from the minute that they started counting down the play clock. I mean, all this stuff has almost become like a public circus and coliseum to go and react to the team this way. And I think that you wouldn't have in another game of this nature the crowd shots and the camera selection that they use from the very beginning, this thing started to really stink up the joint. But leaving, I'm with you too. I think if you're in overtime, what are you doing? How everyone knows, like I had a friend whose dad took his sons to Game 6 of the Mets-Red Sox World Series, and they left early. And that's on you for the rest of your life. Ooh. So you just, I'm not saying this game was a disaster, but like, you don't bail if you're in the stadium in overtime. I'm with you on that.
Let's check in with the people watching live. Any questions, comments? Hit it up, Gravedigger. Jay Tweeter asked, where does last night rank in the pantheon of horrific games? You know, Greg, you're very good at this stuff. I know there's been a lot of bad ones. Thursday night has been the home of a lot of bad games. Is there one that kind of sticks out to you as somehow worse than this?
No, because it didn't cross over into the so bad it's good realm, which are the ones I enjoy. Like, so ugly, it's good. I think the fact that there's these two, like, potential Hall of Fame quarterback, like, it made it unfun. It never got to the fun place. Even Al said that at one point. Like, they were like,
kinda,
are we getting to
depressing,
a good,
so, right?
Yeah, it just was sad.
Like, my kids are starting to get into watching sports now. Jack's turned 8 and Harry's 5.5, 6, and he just likes what his brother likes. And I actually, they have time for their bath, and sometimes I'll tell Emily, I'll be like, let him watch the end of the game. In this case, I was like, no, there's nothing to be gained here from them watching this game. It was just kind of a sad, sad game. What else do we got? Dan, this is from Greg Scamado. Just double G there, Greggy. Dan, how early is it to call a team moribund? Are the Panthers there now? Usually moribund, it's more a feel. There's no designation, but it usually comes in the second half of the season when there's no hope. Hope has to be totally lost for a team to be moribund on the flagship program. Justin Swanson asks, who's the worst two-win team? Patrick, you got this one. Rams, Jets, Broncos.
Oh, that's... Well, you got a couple of... with Matt Stafford hurt right now, I'm gonna lean Rams. Like, he was spraying the ball, not to the extent that Russ was spraying the ball, but almost kind of. Yeah, I think the Jets are better two-win team, considering the opponents right now. Perhaps. Wild. I mean, maybe I'll feel different after, you know, maybe Cooper Rush, the slippers come off a little bit. But yeah, I'll go with the Rams right here.
Yeah.
All right. Jonathan Webster, Greg, what's the story behind the owl painting behind you?
That's a good one too.
My grandfather Heinz Rosenthal painted that. I don't know if there's much more of a story.
Is that true?
He was a painter, and we've got many, many. And the reason why this one's out is my daughter loves owls, and I've rotated what's, you know, and so it's been out in the house for the last few years.
Where's your artwork? Do you have something going on quietly?
I am not artistically inclined, unfortunately. I'm a huge disappointment in that realm. I tried. I was always terrible. My brother's a
virtuoso musician,
extremely talented musician. I always wanted that, but it's not in me. It's not in me.
You're great.
He's
at
sandbagging. He's sandbagging.
Yeah,
no. Absolutely.
He was also in a prog rock ska band. So he has musical talent as well.
I was also best director one-act plays my freshman year in high school. How about that?
Yes. There you go. Robbie asks, question for the heroes. Mark, I want you to handle this one. Would you all change your preseason playoff predictions at this quarter point through the year?
No, I'm going to stick with what I picked. I also don't recall what I picked, so it would be a strange exercise to...
Right. I would stick with it because for the same reason, I don't want to go check. But I'm pretty sure I had the Colts and Broncos in the playoffs. So I'd probably change that.
I'm feeling good. I got the Eagles over the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I want this thing to end
Greg,
right
all right.
Now.
Throw it to another clip, Greg.
No
all right,
Broncos.
One more. In Nugget Jr., in honor of last night's game, can we get a quarter season pain rankings? I would have to think about that one. So no. Next. That's off the top of my dome. But thank you, Nugget Jr. And I like your avatar. Looks like a nice mustache. Avery Baum, is Russ the new line on the Dalton scale?
No, he wouldn't be because he's always been above it. And now, right now, I think it's fair to say he's well below it for the way he's played this year. He's sinking his team. So the Dalton scale guy has to be someone who's, you know, nice and steady right towards the middle. I think Kirk Cousins is settling into
Ryan Tannehill, maybe.
All right. It is time now for the Greg Rosenthal Week 5 Injury Watch presented by Acrisure, a non-FDA approved supplement for men seeking to shed man boobs in middle age. Maybe.
I could use that. Send me a little Acrisure. Miles Garrett looks like he's back, not on the injury report. Jadeveon Clowney, though, is questionable. Brian Robinson looks like he will be playing just about 5 weeks after getting those two gunshots in his leg. He practiced on Friday. That'll be confirmed later in the week. Daniel Jones is starting that game over in London. That's good. But he will be without Kenny Galladay, Kadarius Toney, Wandell Robinson. Jair Alexander will be back for the Packers in that game, which is great news. I thought he might be out a little while. Zay Jones is back for the Jaguars this week. Kyle Pitts is out. Get him out of your fantasy lineup. Amon-Ra St. Brown was back at practice Friday, might play for the Lions. Isaiah McKenzie has a concussion, still in the protocol. Dawson Knox is out, so the Bills are rather shorthanded on both sides of the ball. And your lock is looking pretty good, Dan. No Sam Cosmi for the Washington Commanders. They are missing three starting offensive linemen. They're also missing Jahan Dotson, who's out with a hamstring. I like the Titans in that game, too.
I kind of like the move, potentially. And Greg, I know when you were in your heyday picking games, I think you were someone who liked to do this. Find a team that you know sucks, and then anytime they're in the lock zone, you just lock. I might just lock against Washington 10 times between now and January.
This will be my fourth time in 5 weeks locking against the Cardinals. So I'm 2-1 so far. We'll see if that works out.
That's your thing. That's your move. All right. Before we say goodbye, let's do our hero picks. We're going to first cycle back to last week. Mark, you said Zach Wilson. What was the prediction of Zach Wilson?
I really was just sort of egging him on to rise up to the challenge, be a hero, guide the Jets to victory, and change the way we think about him. And I think he did that. Check the box.
That's a hard check. Big old green check mark for Sessi. Greg, you had Ryan Tannehill would do well or something along those lines.
I'm taking the L. They were 3.5-point underdogs. They won the game. I thought he played well. I mean, taking the W. I can't believe I just gave myself an L.
I had Andy Dalton would play well in London and then be able to leverage that into holding on to the Saints job. Man, if Will lets his field goal goes through the uprights and then they win in overtime and then he wins again, maybe, but that's not how it played out.
He is going to start for them this week.
Yeah, but two good quarters was not my prediction. I predicted a win and high-level play, so I'll take the L there. All right, now, week five predictions before we say goodbye. Patrick Claibon, you're not even a guest to me. You are a member of the ATN family, so we always love you. You've almost said it all, but you need to share your prediction for week five.
Yeah, let's get bold. People in this fantasy world were frustrated about Travis Etienne's production. He gets in the end zone twice against the Houston Texans. Two touchdowns for Travis Etienne.
Beautiful. Ooh. I like that.
All right,
Sessi,
I have a double prediction, analyst. And it's result-based. The Jets are going to beat Miami by 10-plus points. Zach Wilson is going to...
You're all over the Jets this year, and I love
this
it.
Is just what Many I saw Jets this morning. Things. Zach Wilson, 350-plus yards, four touchdowns. And this, part two, the Falcons are going to beat the Bucks by 10-plus points and not even make it look close.
All right.
Whoa.
You just made that really hard on yourself, but I admire the moxie. Greg Rosenthal.
All right, my prediction is just that Travis Kelce wrecks shop against the Raiders. It's like all these other tight end come along lately. Darren Waller is going to be the future. Oh, Kyle Pitts is going to be the future. Oh, like here's this guy. Who's still the best tight end in the freaking NFL? It's Travis Kelce. He's on pace to have one of his very best seasons ever. Travis Kelce. He's still got the championship.
Wait, what is that? But what's your prediction? Because this was
hero of the week. Good. He's the hero.
The sun's going to rise in the east.
What does that mean, though?
He's going to be fantastic.
How do we decide whether that does he need to win the game or what?
I mean,
what
you're not mean? Giving me Ryan Tannehill from a week ago. That's BS. I just checked his PFF score. It's 70. That's over the bar of like, yeah, you were pretty darn good.
I mean, you have so many things going your way, Greg, right now, between Gino and Russ. Like Tony Soprano once said, you got two Virginia hams under each arm and you're crying poverty. On that. I don't like this one. This one's not positive, but the closer we get to Sunday, the more I hate the Detroit Lions going to New England. I think Bill Belichick, even with a compromised offensive situation at quarterback, sees holes all over that he could exploit in attack. And I'm predicting 200-plus rushing yards for the Patriots and a win that drops the team of ATN into moribund territory.
No, this is the fun show, Dan.
Right.
I know.
You can't be picking against the team around the NFL.
It's going to be fun for Greg and all the other Patriots minions.
This is Dan's like move. I remember he used to do this quite often with teams of around the NFL. He would never really get on board, and he would pick against them regularly.
Wait, whoa. Pump the brakes. I love the Lions. I did a whole Hard Knocks podcast on them. I really enjoyed them.
I mean,
them,
then you could quietly believe vibes. That they were going to lose and not put it out into the universe on the show. You could choose anything.
I want to change my prediction now. Jared Goff, okay. 3 touchdowns, Lions.
A prediction off. That's I like
good.
That.
Good. You know what? I'll trade that. I'd rather be wrong than right, but I'm just saying it's just a feeling. It's in the air, and I don't love it. I do love everyone that came and joined us on the Friday Fun Show working title today. Thank you for following along with everything we do. Next time you see us on NFL Network, it will be our preview show, which they put on the network every Saturday morning. And then Sunday, the flagship program, recapping everything that happened in the Sunday that was in our league.
Check out Claybon and I on Game Day View, too, Friday afternoon. We'll be picking some games.
By the way, people are saying, Greg, on your Kelsey prediction, you did not hang onions, you hung shallots. So I don't, you know, take that into your weekend. Mm.
Well, I'm 0-4, so I need something.
Tiny gonads. Until Sunday, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.